Busy day here on ESPN. We're with you till 10:30 this morning Eastern Time live. And then First Take will follow us. SportsCenter comes on at 12:30. And then you see the rest of your day. NFL Live, The Jump, UFC Live, Fight Night ahead of tomorrow night's big card. SportsCenter comes your way for 2 hours at 5 Eastern, including an appearance from the PTI guys. As always, Tony and Michael will be there. And then wrap up your night with SportsCenter, a full day of sports coverage live here, as every day on ESPN. And just so delighted that you've chosen to start your morning by getting up with us here. Mike Greenberg with you from Bristol, Connecticut, as it is the bottom of the hour, 9:30 in the morning in the East. We're with you for that hour. First Take comes along for 2 full hours after that. And we begin with Get Up and Go. Here we go. The NCAA Division I Football Oversight Committee passed a 6-week practice plan yesterday in order to kick the season off on time. The plan now heads to the Division I Council for approval on June 17th. They're moving forward. The NHL and their players have announced that formal training camps for the 24 teams resuming play will begin on July 10th, as long as conditions allow. The league says it will determine the length of camp and the actual return to games at a future date. The NBA is firming up its schedule for the Orlando restart. Regular season games are now scheduled to resume July 30th. 14 of the 22 teams will be eliminated within the first 53 days of the bubble. And as far as team rosters go, they will look slightly different than what we're used to. Teams will be allowed to bring as many as 17 players to Orlando, and playoff rosters will consist of 15 players. Teams will also be able to sign free agents, both who were and were not on NBA rosters this season, to any open roster spots. And now to the NFL. Seahawks coach Pete Carroll told reporters yesterday he regrets not signing Colin Kaepernick back in 2017. While Carroll said he's happy with his current quarterback room, he did hint there might be a team interested in signing Kaepernick right now.
I'm going to tell you something. That after all of the time, that you know, the years that have passed, I never received a phone call about him. I never talked to another head coach about it. I never talked to anybody about it until today. I got a phone call today. I'm not going to tell you who it was. But I got a phone call today asking, inquiring about the situation. So I know, you know, somebody's interested, so we'll see what happens with that.
Somebody is interested, and our group here is full. Look at my terrific collection of analysis that we have here as Dominique joins us for the first time this morning, and I'll get to you in a moment. But Dan Graziano, I'll start with you. Pete Carroll says somebody's interested. What do we know?
Well, I'm skeptical, Greeny, because calling around on this topic over the past week, I have sensed a lot of skepticism around the league about the possibility of a team bringing in Colin Kaepernick and signing him. And I hear what Pete Carroll is saying, but what Pete Carroll has been saying on this for the last couple of years has confused me. I mean, they brought him in. They felt like they would have signed him, but they felt like someone else was going to, or he was too good. I don't understand exactly what the reasoning is there from Pete Carroll. The other thing to remember is Seattle did not work Colin Kaepernick out. They just met with him. So I'm a little curious what kind of information this other team could be seeking to get from Pete Carroll about an interview that took place a couple of years ago. So I think what we've learned is it's never simple when it comes to the concept of Colin Kaepernick getting back into the NFL at this point. And I don't think it will be a smooth and easy process if it does happen. But I think there are still a lot of questions to be answered about what's going on behind the scenes there in terms of whether a team is really serious or whether he has a real chance to get back on a roster.
All right. So as we dive into this here, it feels to me like there really are obviously two stories here. One of them is about a quarterback potentially looking to land with a football team. We all understand there is something far larger than that, however, going on when that person is Colin Kaepernick. Dominique, I will start with you. We've not had you with us this morning. In your mind, what would it mean if Kaepernick were to wind up on a team this year?
I think it would be a big step for that particular team and the owner at that team specifically, because that's one of those decisions that goes to the top. It's not something that I think a general manager or a head coach can act on alone. So I think it would be a major step for a team to show that they're prepared, because while I think we're in a climate right now where there's very little backlash about Colin Kaepernick, I think bringing him on your roster, and he's not going to be silent, he's going to continue to talk about the things that are important, and putting him in your locker room, I think, is going to maybe rub some of your fans the wrong way. So I think it'll take some ownership, a minor bit of bravery from one owner, one team, to sign him. And I hope they do, but I can understand, or I expect many of them to not view him as a starter right away. And it's hard probably for them to justify in their mind why they would would bring in a backup quarterback who would garner so much attention.
Well, I guess we didn't have you in our first hour, so I'll just follow up that one quickly to you, and then I'll come to the rest of the group here. What do you expect if you were making a decision to bring him into your football team? And again, it's almost impossible to say absent to the other stuff, but just from a football standpoint, what would you think you were getting in Colin Kaepernick right now?
Yeah, it's been a long time. So I am obviously very pro Colin Kaepernick, and I would hope that he could come back and return to his peak form, but that's just not how football often works. I think maybe he can get there, but it's going to take some time. So I don't expect peak Colin Kaepernick as soon as he arrives. I expect him to be at a backup level and hopefully build his way back up to being a starter and top of the league type guy would be what I would dream would happen, but I think it's hard to expect that from someone who's been out of the league as long as he has been.
Yeah. So Lewis, then let me come to you as a person whose job it has been and might someday be again to assemble football teams. Colin Kaepernick is 32 years old. This is a league where quarterbacks are playing well into their late 30s and in some cases into their 40s. This is a guy who at his best, and it isn't that long ago, was absolutely one of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League and was one play away from winning a Super Bowl. So how do you see the situation right now and what do you expect to happen?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you were sitting in that chair, obviously, I think managing expectations is the number one thing you're going to have to do. I don't think you can expect him 4 years removed from playing football in the NFL to come in and be someone who is going to be a immediate contributor at a level that is anywhere near what it was when he last played in the NFL in 2016. So I think obviously setting your expectations is going to be something first and foremost that's going to be important that you do. And I think everything from there is going to have to be taken very methodically and very slowly as far as what is it that he actually, where is he at physically on the football field and how can we quickly get him up to speed depending upon, you know, relative to what the expectations are and ultimately what we see his role as being. Is that being someone who could actually be a starter at some point in time or someone who was going to be a primary backup and support the starter and be one of those guys who is okay with fulfilling that role? So I think you have to be very open-minded. You have to be very flexible from a football standpoint. But as we know, this is not just a football conversation and there's just so many other conversations that you're going to have concerning all of this. Unfortunately, and I'm, you know, I for one am very skeptical as far as, you know, the whether or not this is something that is truly organic or whether or not this is truly a team capitalizing on an opportunity. And that's just something that just doesn't sit very well with me, although that's just where we are with it.
I understand that part of it completely. Jeff, let me circle back on the football part of it. I was just looking this up here as we're talking because I wanted to make sure I had the number right. This is a quarterback who ran for 181 yards in a playoff game. He was doing the things that a lot of quarterbacks that feels like that every team wants their quarterback to be able to do now. He was doing them back at a time when almost no one was doing them. So it feels like his skill set fits very well into what the NFL is right now. Could you see a scenario where after a year or something like that of sort of getting himself back into it, he becomes a top-level quarterback again?
Well, I think you got to start with the backup role that we're all talking about. And I think part for me would be to be able to see in you know, what can he bring to the organization, right? And so think of a backup quarterback's job in particular. It's really to support the starting quarterback, right? Cut film, watch tape, you know, explain your experiences. The one thing he does have as a starter who's been successful and gone to a Super Bowl is when you're sitting in that QB room, especially with a dual threat mentality at the quarterback position, he can give you a lot of information. Hey, here's how teams played me. This is what teams did once we got in the playoffs. So as you're talking about what the role of a backup quarterback would be, that would be the start, right? Can a guy get back? 4 years is a long time. And I really have no idea. You have no idea how much he's trained, what he's done. I know they put tape out, but I would say the same thing as all the other guys. There possibly will be a workout, those kind of things. But it has to be from the mindset of bringing him in to help the organization. And this is just strictly football that I'm talking about. Can he sit in the quarterback room and bring value? And when you're talking about what a lot of teams are doing now, he's been successful doing that. So, you know, if you're sitting there and you're goes, hey, who's going to be my backup quarterback? Can he help? You know, can he help with what's going to go on, how teams are going to game plan and look at us? I think that's the question that teams have to ask themselves as far as, Would he be capable right away to come in and start a football game? Man, you just have no idea. Listen, I had an experience when Peyton Manning got injured. They brought Kerry Collins in. I don't know how far Kerry Collins had been out of football in all honesty, but I know it was very difficult to get up to speed, even in counts, all the different things that had changed. it was very difficult. So in my experience, I think expecting that a starter type mentality is not, but you could definitely start that QB position and see the value he brings to an organization.
Now, we will see. Again, this is something that we'll keep a close eye on over the next few days, and clearly it could go into the next few weeks. Another very interesting and I think important story today. NFL coaches have been making their returns to team facilities as the league has sent out guidelines outlining the procedures for the full reopening of practice facilities. However, Ravens head coach John Harbaugh said yesterday that it is, quote, humanly impossible to meet all the virus mandates. This is what he told Baltimore's 105.7 The Fan. I've seen all the memos on that. And to be quite honest with you, it's impossible what they're asking us to do. Humanly impossible. So we're going to do everything we can do. We're going to space. We're going to have masks. But you know, it's a communication sport. We have to be able to communicate with each other in person. We have to practice. So quickly here, we don't have a lot of time. Dan Graziano, what more are you hearing about these kinds of concerns?
I think everyone expects that it's going to be difficult to configure the facility around these recommendations. I also think people expect that the recommendations will evolve over the coming weeks as we get closer to training camps and as the NFL is able to observe what happens in the NBA, in Major League Baseball, if they can get on the field, what's going on in the European soccer leagues. The NFL is adjusting and learning based on those things, and I think we're going to see more complaints like this, but ultimately, the other option is to not play, and I think most people are going to try and work to figure out a way around what they need to do.
Yes, obviously. Look, all of us want to see football come back because we're fans and we have a desire to watch it, and it was a vested interest in all the other reasons. But, I mean, John Harbaugh might be speaking for a lot of people. Nick, he was your old coach. What'd you think of that?
Yeah. No, I mean, he's right. The logistics of making it work in the locker room, the teams are as big as they are going to be before they start making cuts. So there's not even enough room in the locker room. So you'll have to move people in shifts through the lockers, through showers, through lunch, and through workouts. And then you put them all together for practice and huddles. So, like, he's right. It's impossible to have 6 feet apart in football on the field. It's also going to be incredibly difficult to have 6 feet apart in mask and communicating in a locker room that's going to have up to 100 players and coaches and stuff in there trying to get ready for a practice that starts at one time and has a hard end date. So you can't even make practice longer. So it's going to be a challenge. I think he's probably right. As it stands now, if you want them to follow the rules, it can't be done.
What do you think, Lewis?
Yeah, I mean, it's a monumental task. It really is. And I think there's going to be, you know, there's going to be a trickle down effect as far as the quality of play when we ultimately get to, you know, games on the football field. That's going to be noticeable because football is one of those games where he is right. You have to have person to person interaction and you have to practice and you have to be close to people. And so with that comes risk. And I think people are going to have to really get comfortable with assuming that risk. Otherwise, you're just not going to be able to play the game. It's just that simple. So I think there's still some things that need to be worked through. Everybody's going to have to adjust because, as Dan alluded to and we both alluded to in the previous segment, the only other option is to not play. And nobody wants that, so they're trying to figure this out. It's just that what you are used to and what you are accustomed to is not what you're going to get currently. And I know, look, we know how cramped the locker rooms can become. There's going to be trailers probably outside of these facilities. There's going to be players spaced all over the place. You're right. I don't know how you get into a huddle. Are you just going to line up every play and the coach is just going to communicate to the quarterback and he's going to tell everybody what to do? Are you not going to be allowed to huddle anymore? There's so many things that still have to be considered in order to make this game as safe as possible given the current environment. That's what they get paid for, though. That's what they're going to have to figure out.
These are decisions no one ever imagined themselves having to make. I have to leave it there, guys, in the interest of time. Thank you. We'll come back. Much more football on the menu as we continue to get up this morning, including one of Tom Brady's former teammates saying the Patriots will be better without him. That can't be possible, can it? We'll talk about it. And then Michael Jordan had a lot to say about Scottie Pippen in The Last Dance. Did Pippen drop some Hall of Fame shade on MJ yesterday? Oh, we'll get to the bottom of this as we continue. Get up on ESPN.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
We are back on Get Up, and let's talk about the Patriots. After ranking in the top five in offensive efficiency each of the previous five seasons, they slipped to 17th last year. Their worst mark in the 14-year history of that metric. And they were even worse in the second half of the season. The biggest culprit to that was their passing game. In their final eight games, they averaged the second fewest yards per attempt in the league. And overall, Tom Brady averaged 6.6 yards per attempt. That was the second worst of his career. And his 24 touchdowns were the fewest he's thrown in a non-injury season since 2006. And Brady's former teammate, Christian Fourier, had this to say, quote, "They're better off without him." I have a hard time going on, but I'll try. It's not because he's not good or he can't throw it or he's lost some speed on his fastball. It's because where he was in his career, his age, what he wanted to achieve and what the Patriots were trying to achieve were completely different. This offense is not going to be able to move forward with Brady as the quarterback. Those throwaways were important. It's because he wasn't willing to adapt. There's the difference. He wasn't willing to let N'Keal Harry grow. Stand by. Give me people to talk to. Thank you. Here they are. Lewis, Jeff, Dan, someone. Look at Dan's face. The whole world looks like Dan looks right now. Jeff, let me start with you. He's basically saying that the reason that offense last year did not get better was because of Brady, not because of everybody else, which I think has been generally the conventional wisdom. Is he right?
No, I completely disagree. I mean, when you talk about a quarterback, and what he's kind of insinuating is that he was more concerned with his stats and throwing the ball away and doing these things than he would be winning football games. That's not the Tom Brady that we've all known. You see his competitive nature. You see the way that he preps for the game. His career speaks for itself. And so I don't agree that they're going to be better off without him. Their offensive line didn't do a great job last year, run game wise. They had a lot of different issues going on. Really, their defense kept them in a number, if not won them football games. So to lay it at Tom Brady saying they're going to be better, I just don't buy what he's selling.
Lewis?
Yeah. Look, I think with Tom, when you watch Tom objectively, I think there's no question that there is a comfort level that he had with certain players like Julian Edelman that he didn't have with everyone else. And I think we all know that Tom's one of those people who prides himself on protecting the football, and he obviously didn't want to take the kind of risks that normally we, you know, think that quarterbacks should be able to take or should be willing to take given Tom's cachet and what he has done in his career. So I think, you know, from that perspective, maybe he frustrated some people. Maybe he was someone who people thought wasn't allowing receivers to grow and wasn't willing to take some chances. But to say that they are better off without him, and that Jarrett Stidham, who I love unconditionally as far as what his upside is, and I think he's going to shock everyone, to say that they're better off without him is really to say that Jared, although he has not played at all in a meaningful way in a regular season game and done anything and accomplished anything in terms of a resume, is someone who would be better for them right off the bat, which is really what Christian is alluding to. Is this ridiculous? I mean, you can't say that. No, I mean, you can poke holes in what Tom's philosophy was as far as how he played the game, you know, later on in his career. You can poke holes in that all you want, and some of it may be valid. But to say that they're better off without him, considering he's the most accomplished quarterback in the history of the game, I mean, that seems like you're trying to get some attention and get some clicks and get some headlines. And I like Christian, and I know Christian, but I mean, that just sounds ridiculous. And that puts, quite honestly, I mean, I don't know how much stock people are putting into this, but that puts an inordinate amount of pressure. It would if it gained steam on Jared Stidham, considering the fact that he hasn't won anything.
Yeah.
Anything at all. And I think Bill Belichick would be one of those people, too, who would sit there and go, I mean, come on now.
Yeah.
Come on. We're not better off without him, but we're going to move on without him.
Yeah. He only threw four passes last year. Graz, what are you hearing here? What are you hearing from inside New England, and what are you hearing from around the league?
Yeah, I think inside New England, I think they view themselves as a team that's going to try and win with its running game, right? They believe they have depth and quality of variety of skill sets in that running back room, and they think that that's going to be a big part of Jarrett Stidham's development, too, the ability to lean on that running game, throw to the backs. And of course, they believe in their defense. They were able to bring back more of that defense, I think, than some people may have expected. You know, in terms of Brady, I've heard the flip side, right? You and Jenna Lane were talking last hour about the Brady-Arians marriage, and there are people out there who wonder about Arians being the risky offensive coordinator type and Brady being hyper-cautious about protecting the football. My good friend Hembo was giving me some stats earlier this morning. Far and away, the most passes on third down short of the marker, Tom Brady last year in the league. So he's definitely a guy that protects the football and prioritized that. And maybe that's kind of what Christian was talking about here. And not a guy who was after preservation of stats, but more hyper-cautious about protecting the football, possibly to the detriment of other aspects of the offense. Still a lot to say that they would actually be better off without him. They did want to bring him back.
Okay, we'll see what winds up happening with all of that. Meanwhile, guys, I want to show you a little eye candy because I haven't been able to show you a golf shot in a really long time. Let me show you a really good one. This is Sung Kang yesterday as they are playing there in Dallas. This is on the par 3 13th. No fans in attendance, and take a look here. That's a hole-in-one. That's an ace. And there were two things about this that are astonishing. There's no noise. Like, there's nothing wrong with the audio on your television. There are no fans there, so there was no cheering. And as a result, he said he didn't even know what had gone in until he got close to the green and didn't see the ball sitting there. Remarkable times. All right, coming up, yesterday was the 23rd anniversary, it's ironic, of Michael Jordan's flu game. Scottie Pippen went to Instagram to remember it. What's he trying to say? When do you see this? We'll get to the bottom of it with this man, Richard Jefferson, ready to talk some hoops and a whole lot more. Getting up with us on ESPN.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Tomorrow night on ESPN, it is the Academy Award-winning documentary Free Solo, which is a look at Alex Honnold's extraordinary climb 3,200 feet up the face of Yosemite's El Capitan without ropes. It's Free Solo tomorrow night at 9 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. And I will tell you, I've heard so much about that movie, and I've never seen it, so I'm going to watch it and get a look at it. I believe it's tonight is the movie, right? We will be watching that tonight. The copy is incorrect. It's tonight that is the film, and I'm going to watch that tonight because everyone tells me it's awesome, so we will see. And with that thought in mind, it is nearing the top of the hour, almost 10 o'clock in the morning Eastern time here in the United States. Mike Greenberg in Bristol, and we are delighted that you have chosen to get up with us. If you're tuning in to watch First Take, they're coming your way in 30 minutes. We're with you a little extra time today. First Take, a full two-hour edition comes your way at the bottom of the next hour. But we are busy this morning, and the first thing we need to do is get to the bottom of this. Yesterday was the anniversary, ironically the 23rd anniversary, of the famous Michael Jordan flu game when he played through flu-like symptoms and scored 38 points in a big Bulls win in the finals. Now, in the recent Last Dance documentary, Jordan credited his symptoms to food poisoning from pizza. Yesterday, Scottie Pippen posted this, and he posted it with that legendary photo of himself, you know, sort of carrying Michael off the floor. And he just put hashtag TBT, and then he put the sick emoji, the pizza emoji, and the shrug emoji. So I saw it. I think Ramona was the first one that I saw. She posted it, she reposted it, and I saw it. And I immediately sent it to the staff saying, what is he trying to say? And so in times like these, I turn to Jalen Rose. RJ is with us. Richard, it's wonderful to see you again. And Jalen, of course, every day here. And Jay, you are the best of anyone I've ever known at interpreting social media. So what is Scottie Pippen trying to say?
He's definitely throwing shade, Greeny. Just think about what has happened recently. Scottie has said that Kobe's better than MJ. He said LeBron is better than MJ. The Last Dance doc has come out. A scene that was in the doc about Scottie not going in the game when Tony Kukoc made the game-winning shot. A lot of people didn't realize that Michael Jordan wasn't on the team. And then all of a sudden, Horace Grant, Scottie Pippen, and Jerry Krause's reputations look a lot different to the current public. And the pizza game does too, because for many years people been saying he had the flu. I've been trying to tell people he didn't have the flu. Okay, Jason Eyre, the director, came on Jalen and Jacoby Greeny and told us something disgusting Michael Jordan did. He was so mad that the people around him ate dinner and didn't wait for him. He ordered the pizza and spit all on the pizza so nobody else would eat it. And after you watch The Last Dance, I'm pretty sure cigars were involved, possibly cards were involved, adult beverages were involved, and late night pizza for an aging athlete. Okay, so of course you're going to get sick. So I'm rolling with Scotty on this one.
Okay, so the first thought is, yuck. I'm thrown by all of this, and I apologize to everyone who is at a breakfast hour across America. So I get that part of it. But Richard, what specifically is Scotty saying to Michael here? He's got the sick emoji, the pizza emoji, the shrug emoji. Is he questioning the pizza part of the story? What specifically is Scotty trying to say?
I'm not going to speak for Scotty, but I think, you know, it's been well publicized that Scotty and some other players didn't like how they were portrayed. And sometimes you send a shot out. You just send a shot as like, hey, we know where the skeletons are buried. We know the truth. Not just like, hey, what we're going to tell the documentary, what we're going to say. So to me, I don't know for sure. I'm with Jalen. I heard stories. I heard a lot of different stories over the years. We knew it wasn't a 18-hour flu. We all knew that that wasn't true. They give us the pizza story. And maybe Scotty's like, so you want to tell a lot of truth, huh? Well, maybe we can tell a little bit more truth and just give a shrug, just to let you know, hey, we know where the bodies are buried.
Okay. That makes sense to me. Listen, and I do not apologize for speculating. Scotty has put out the most, what? Mm-hmm. Jalen, what? What is with that? What's the face?
It just baffles me. Everybody that wants to be a celebrity, I want you to remember something. Money and success don't necessarily buy happiness. Think about what we're saying on national TV. Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, the greatest dynamic duo of all time, don't get along. That is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That is it. Hey, but you know what? I'll take the six rings. I'll never talk to you again, RJ. If that was me and you, I'd take the rings.
I'd be
you
cool.
Ain't never got to hire
after
me
six,
for the Charlotte
cool.
squad or nothing.
I'll say this.
You ain't got to let me wear your kicks or anything.
I'll say this. You spit on anything I'm planning on eating, and I'll never speak to you again. That's a whole other question for a whole other time. All right.
That's let me all get it to takes?
Let me get to some business here. Richard all of a sudden is interested. Okay, stand by. Meanwhile, we have this news. As many as 40 to 50 NBA players have expressed concerns about restarting their season in the Orlando bubble, although no one is formally asked out of the 22-team restart. Carmelo Anthony says he's still not 100% sure if he's going to play.
As far as actually playing and going back down into Orlando, I'm still up in the air a little bit because I really don't, you know, we don't have all the details. We don't know a lot of information. So until we have that, it's kind of hard to just, you know, commit to it 100%.
Now, Woj, adding to that, says sources say players deciding against participating in Orlando could be replaced by a substitution player. NBA plans to allow replacements for players who test positive or suffer injuries. Replaced players become ineligible for the rest of the season, the 1920 season, which is what's going on this summer. But Richard, you're talking to a lot of people, I assume. What do you make of this? What do you think of the idea that players may not go and how the league will handle that?
Well, and I understand what Carmelo's saying. His team would be fighting for the eighth spot. And so, you know, for a guy that's a little bit older, that has a family, and he's like, wait, you need me to be isolated to possibly get to that eighth spot, to possibly lose out, you know, in the first round to the Lakers. And then on top of it, you're risking the health of your family, your extended family. You don't know all of the details. And I think that that's fair. I'm surprised that more players aren't, hey, we need to know the exact plan. Basically, the NBA and the Players Association came together and said, hey, this is the idea. This is the plan. Everyone kind of accepted it. But ultimately, there's still a ton more details to get figured out between now and then. And I think those details, the devil is in the details. That's when I think players, you'll start to hear more and more players either speak up or calm down and say, we're okay with this.
Jalen?
I love this so very much for a few reasons, because as I keep saying, players are not essential workers. And what ends up happening when you have the coronavirus take place and businesses and things start opening back up, they do it before sports happens. And Carmelo Anthony, and the reason why I was laughing, the visual, I appreciate it because RJ, what he looked was rich. And I was, it made me happy because it's like, if I need to go to my job, I will go to my job. If my job's still going to pay me and I'm rich, I need to think about my health. Stop believing that people at the grocery store or UPS are there because they want to be. They're there because they need to pay their bills. Carmelo Anthony's going to the Hall of Fame. Imagine if you DeMar DeRozan. You just lost Aldridge. The Spurs are championship or bust. You know you're not going far. And you a seasoned vet averaging 20 points every year? You got to think about it. I'm just saying.
So what they need to do, though, if you're Adam Silver and the people that work with him, is you have to figure out a way to create a representative playoffs here. Right, Jalen? So if some guys aren't going to want to go, they're going to let you bring some other guys in. How's that going to work? Because you can't let it get too gimmicky. You can't just let them say, OK, well, we'll take the best player. We'll take Steph Curry, you know, for these playoffs here because he's not on a team that's in it. So, Jalen, how do they do that?
So you don't have to overthink this one. Remember, at the end of each NBA year, when you start to look at the rosters and some of the people that are playing in basketball games, as certain teams start to align themselves with either tanking or rebuilding versus trying to make a run and build around young players, there are a lot of guys that you see getting opportunities on rosters. That's what I expect. But if there's going to be basketball and you can play 8 regular season games, it's up to the league to try to find a way, along with his teams, to finish the regular season as much as possible.
One real quick thing, Greeny. Yeah. I want to know how many players on the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Bucks.
None.
I want to know
None.
How many players on those three teams.
None.
How many players on those three teams are questioning? That's the real truth.
None.
The teams that are favored
None.
To win a championship, that's fine.
None.
We've heard from Dame. We've heard from Carmelo. We've heard from Malcolm Brogdon. We've heard from different guys. And again, some of these younger players are like, man, no, I'm good. Tell me how many players. Those are the only numbers. We could do a 3, maybe 4 team tournament. That's all. 4
hey,
team
RJ.
Tournament. Tell me somebody from the Lakers or the Clippers. Tell me.
Hey, we heard from that 35-year-old dude in his 17th year, and he like, if it's basketball, I'm playing. Right? He
you know,
like, I'm playing.
Exactly. I'm
Guys,
playing.
They have to play somebody.
And you know, Bron right now is texting Kuzma, you don't say your young butt don't say one word. You hear me? Don't you say one thing.
I get it. The Lakers want to play. The Clippers want, but they have to play somebody. They have to have teams to play against.
Well, they can play each other.
I guess only each other. But look, you can't have the Harlem Globetrotters without the Washington Generals. Somebody has to be playing them.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll continue in a moment. LeBron, he's going to love this. A number of our NBA insiders have the Lakers winning it all. Do Jalen and Richard agree? They will answer that question next. Get up on ESPN.
Napa know-how.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa. Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping on over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $50 or more. Quality parts, delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
We are back on Get Up, and over the course of this week, Dabo Swinney has faced criticism for not firing an assistant coach who used a racial slur during a practice in 2017, and then for recently wearing a shirt that says, "Football Matters." Tomorrow, Swinney will attend an on-campus protest organized by two of his players who are on Packer and Durham this morning.
I understand where people are coming from, but me personally, knowing Coach Swinney, I know the man he is, and I've never doubted his character because I've seen, the way he lives every day. So that's his testament to me is how he lives.
He's trying to learn and educate himself on how to better handle situations like this in the future. Because I feel like we all, not just Coach Swinney, I think a lot of people in America, they're taking it's been a good time for people to self-reflect and look within and see, hey, where can I be more a part of the solution? Where can I educate myself more to help this cause? And I feel like that's what he's doing. And I would just say, as a player who Coach Swinney's been nothing but good to me and a lot of my friends on the team, I would just say I definitely wanted to defend him.
So those are the thoughts of two current Clemson players. I've seen words of support, strong words of support as well, over the course of this week from Christian Wilkins and DeAndre Hopkins, among others. So Paul Feinbaum joins us here along with Lewis. And Paul, I'll start with you. What is your reaction to these comments we heard today and some of the others from his former players?
I think they're very important, Greeny. While we can quibble, and we have, about Dabo Swinney's performance lately, and I don't think he's going to be nominated for a Nobel Prize because of his behavior, the players are more important, in my opinion, or anyone else's opinion. And right now, I think Dabo Swinney needs to get to tomorrow night in Clemson and show himself well at that demonstration. I think he needs to say some important words. I don't think he needs to continue to be defensive and somewhat out of touch, as I believe he has in his previous two statements. But I think tomorrow night is really the most important thing that has happened. And if he gets through that, I don't think he's going to be hurt terribly by this incident.
Again, Lewis, Dabo is expected to speak tomorrow at this. What do you expect to hear from him? What do you think we need to hear from him?
Well, I think what we need to hear, rather what we don't need to hear, is all these statements about, you know, everyone defending Dabo and making, not, I don't want to really say making excuses for Dabo, but all these, you know, statements regarding, you know, what his character actually is and what he meant to say and really what he does stand for. I think we just need to hear from Dabo this. We need to hear a little bit more empathy in terms of, it's not about me, it's about the greater good, it's about the cause, it's about Black Lives Matter, it's about learning and educating. It's not about me sitting here trying to defend myself and make excuses for the actions that I did or didn't take in the past, or the fact that I was so tone deaf to the point where I got photographed with a Football Matters t-shirt, which is just, look, I mean, those kind of things, you really can't defend those kind of things right now and explain those kind of things away, given the kind of, you know, overall worldwide attention that this matter is getting, and rightfully so. I think you need to be just aware of the fact that we are in a different time. We are at an inflection point as a society, and you, as someone who was a very influential white male who has a lot of cachet and someone who really can advance this cause and in effect a lot of positive change, you need to be better than that. And I really don't want to hear excuses about what it was that you intended to say. And quite, look, I commend Trevor Lawrence and the rest of the players for sticking up for their coach. And who knows, maybe when I was 18, 19, 20 years old, I would have done the same. But I will tell you this, given the importance and the gravity of the subject that we're talking about, Dabo has to be better. Dabo has to be someone who really is all in as far as wanting to eradicate racial injustices. Because if you're not all in, you can't just be halfway in. And I want to hear him say, look, I am all in. It's not about me. And I'm going to do everything I can going forward to make sure I'm doing my part. That's really just what I want to hear. I don't want to hear any more defenses or any more statements from his players or even from him as far as why he did the things that he did. I just want to hear him effect positive change and put his money where his mouth is in that sense.
Paul, you cover that sport every single day. He is right now about as successful as any coach is. What do you think is at stake for him tomorrow?
A great deal, Greeny. He has clumsily found himself in this spotlight. We're not talking about very many other people. I mean, there's some outlier stories that are important. But Dabo Swinney right now is where all the eyes are. And Lewis is 100% correct. If he gets up there tomorrow and goes right back to the beginning and gives us a point-by-point, he will lose very badly. But if he gets up there, and I think Lewis said the key word, has empathy. He has not shown empathy for the cause right now. He's only talked about himself. If he does that tomorrow night, I think he's going to be fine. If he doesn't, we'll be talking about this Monday morning.
We will see what he does then. Again, we will discuss this further on Monday morning. Guys, thank you both very much for being a part of this here. Meanwhile, I will segue to the NBA as we're looking forward to the restart of the season. The panel of our ESPN.com reporters released their playoff predictions. The race for the 8th seed in the West is a very close vote, but the Blazers, Portland, getting a slight edge over Memphis there. In the East, the Bucks were picked by every single panelist to make the Eastern Conference Finals. The Celtics and Raptors were the next two highest picked teams, so everyone generally likes Milwaukee. In the West, it will likely be the Battle of L.A. 97% of the panelists picked the Lakers, 85% picked the Clippers to make the West Finals. As far as the finals are concerned, the Lakers were picked by half the panel to win it, followed by the Bucks and then the Clippers. When this panel was last polled in March, the Bucks got over 60 percent of the vote. But obviously, as Jalen and many of others have said over the course of time, this is a whole new season. Zach Lowe is back with us. Jalen and RJ are with us here. And so, Zach, I'll start with you as you rejoin us. Right now, who do you have coming out of the Eastern Conference?
I've had Bucks all season. I don't really see a reason not to pick the Bucks, especially since the layoff has given Giannis's knee a chance to heal. So I'll stick with chalk. I'll stick with the Bucks. They've been the best team all year in the East.
Jalen, you agree?
There won't be chalk, except in the Western Conference, potentially, because the Lakers and or the Clippers are going to win that conference. In the Eastern Conference, I disagree, Zach Lowe. Get low. I love the season Giannis has had. He's my MVP. What up, family? But I'm taking the Boston Celtics. I think, RJ, if we was having a pickup game and you were taking seven players, I think five of the seven would be from the Boston Celtics. Tatum. Jaylen Brown. Kemba Walker. All terrific. Gordon Hayward's been an all-star, second year off an injury. Don't sleep on the Celtics. That's my pick.
All right, so we have one vote for the Bucks and one vote for the Celtics. RJ, break the tie. Who you got?
Honestly, I think given the new format, the Bucks should be the favored, but I will say that the Boston Celtics, to me, they do have the versatility. They have the youth. Understand, you know, Milwaukee has a little bit older players. Like, you have Giannis, but you have older players on that Bucks, so it could take them a little bit longer to get fired up. But Jalen knows, when you're 23 years old, when you're 24 years old, you don't stretch, you don't ice, you wipe off the bottom of your shoes, and you get in a defensive stance. And so having a younger but very talented team that the Boston Celtics have, I believe that they are the one team that could take down Milwaukee Bucks. So I'm going to go with Boston just because of this environment that we're in right now.
All right, two votes for the Celtics and one for the Bucks. Let's go to the West, and this time I'll start with you, RJ. Who do you have coming out of the West?
Honestly, I have to say the Clippers. Like, I really like the Lakers, but again, I'm going to go with the same format that I'm using for Boston. You have a ton of versatile players with the Clippers. You can lose a Morris and you still have a Reggie Jackson. You have so many guys down the line. You can lose a Patrick Beverley and you still have Paul George and Kawhi, and you have so much talent down that line. So to me, the Clippers, because of their depth, because of their versatility, especially between guys that are 6'2 to 6'9, they got the most of them in the NBA that can really play. So I'm going with the Clippers.
He's got the Clips. Jalen, you agree?
RJ, I love the reasons why you're going with the Clips. Having four players average over 19, Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams, to me, they should split the sixth man of the year. But I'm going with the Lakers because I remember being in the gym and Patrick Beverley was trying to get the ball up against Avery Bradley's defense, and he got ripped a couple of times. And I started to look at the Lakers squad a lot different with he and Danny Green's defensive prowess and their ability to knock down threes, plus the dominance of LeBron James leading the league in assists and setting the table, plus the height the Lakers have up front with AD, an all-NBA performer, Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee. That can be suffocating. So I'm taking the Los Angeles Lakers.
Zach, Clippers or Lakers?
I said Clippers to win the title in July. I see no reason to pick anyone but the Clippers now. They're versatile. They can play any style, big or small. I think Jalen did hit on one potential semi-weakness, like a little bit less ball handling than you would like, but they are really versatile, so I'm sticking Clippers.
All right, I got 1 minute. I want to pick from each of you because we've all named all the usual suspects, Boston, Milwaukee, and the two L.A. teams. Give me one other team, Zach, that we should be watching.
You all are sleeping. If you're looking for a sleeper, you're all sleeping on the defending champion Toronto Raptors. Everyone's talking Celtics, Celtics, Celtics in the East. Raptors are ahead of the Celtics. Marc Gasol's healthy. Put some respect on the Raptors' name.
What do you think, Jalen?
The player people sleeping on is Kyle Kuzma. I didn't even say his name in the previous thing, and he's going to ball. The team is the Portland Trail Blazers. You get back Nurkic. You get back Collins. They were in the Western Conference playoffs last year.
Richard doesn't want to hear it. Richard, final word. Who's your sleeper?
Jamal Murray and the Denver Nuggets. The one disadvantage that they don't that they're going to be playing against is they won't be playing in the Mile High. That's a huge advantage for them. That's the only reason why I'm not picking them, but you should watch them.
I'm out of time here. I'd love to talk further about it. We didn't even mention the Houston Rockets, who are a team I think people need to be watching when they come back. Guys, awesome. Thank you. RJ, great to see you again, my man. Got to take a break because First Take is starting up. Pete Carroll says he regrets not signing Colin Kaepernick. Max and Dominique have thoughts. Next, First Take follows up on ESPN. Get Up is brought to you by DiGiorno. It's not delivery, it's DiGiorno. And by Disney Plus. All of your favorites, all in one place. Sign up today. And one more quick reminder, because I've had a chance to watch it. The Sosa Maguire film, the 30 for 30, is Sunday night. Really fascinating stuff. Whether you're old enough to remember that home run chase or not, I highly recommend it. Have a wonderful weekend. I'll see you Monday. First Take starts now.